Before we get started with this next episode, if you'd like to support the podcast, please visit anchor.fm/Lilith's Left Hand. There are links for the new website, lilithsleftand.com, where you can follow the blog and any other happenings at Lilith's Left Hand. You can share on various social media through the Anchor site, and please consider subscribing there at any of your favorite podcatchers, and rate and review us if the opportunity exists for you. Anything you can do to support the show would be greatly appreciated. Take good care of yourself.
And welcome back to Lilith's Left Hand podcast. I am Jessica, your co-host, and I'm here with Emma.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing really good.
Good.
Yeah.
Me too.
I've been kind of obsessed with astrology lately. I've been feeling very emotional, and I thought, why am I feeling so emotional? So I decided to really look into astrology. So I'm kind of obsessed with that right now. What's going on with you?
Well, you know, just the same old. Well, really not the same old. I started a new intake of OBS students because people from my last group, you know, finished the course. So that's been exciting. So, you know, it's just the beginning stages, but those parts are often, you know, the most exciting.
Oh, for sure. Like making new, like forging new relationships with people.
Yeah, that's it. And like the people in my last group, you know, I consider them friends now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, for sure.
It's all about community building. I bang on about that a lot, as you well know.
Well, it's funny because I'm always telling my daughter, who's 12, like, you know, and we talk about making friends, and I always tell her, like, well, do the things that interest you so that you can make friends that have the same interests. And now I'm starting to do that. And so, like, in these mentorships, you know, you're like creating these relationships that are such a give and take of energy. It's so amazing and exciting.
Yeah, I know. And I think the good thing about, you know, getting out into communities where you're interested, particularly, well, because my focus is like from the occult angle, you know, oftentimes those friendships can really be really solid and act as foundations to kind of, you know, come together and build those communities like us, you know?
Yeah. And it can be so good for our practice because it's these people that have the same interests as us, right? And then, but in addition, they have these totally different perspectives.
Yeah.
And so it can really help, like, opening up your own practice. It's like,
yeah, it's good to open yourself up to new ideas, you know.
Yeah, and you can like all these people that have totally different ideas and opinions.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter how experienced you are, you know, it's easy to get stuck in a rut. And I think sometimes, you know, well, you do it without realizing until you're in there and, you know, you're struggling to get out.
Yeah. I started laughing, too, because I'm thinking it's kind of like watching documentaries. You know how you watch documentaries so that you can see the way other people live? But you're like in your community. Everything is a documentary. You're like this. Here you are. Connecting with somebody about your spirituality or your practice or whatever, but they outside of that and the way they express it is so vastly different than yours. They're like, oh my god, and you do what? That's amazing.
Yeah,
so sorry, got a little excited. I'm so excited that you're getting a whole new group of people that get to kind of join in that community with you.
It's fun.
Yeah.
You know, it is really, you know, it's serious and it's a lot of hard work, but it's also, you know, it's fun.
This is a really good segue and probably one that will make you blush if you're a blushing type. But like, it just makes me think like, oh, these people are so lucky to be doing this community thing with you because you have like opened up a lot of stuff for me in my personal practice. And it segues kind of into what I want to talk about today, the point of our podcast today, other than hanging out. I have been hearing a lot about the Great Resignation here in the
US. Yeah.
And when I hear about it and the stuff that I see in the news, it never feels genuine or like it makes any sense. And
yeah. Well, yeah. Over here, there's been loads of shortages, you know, and like there's the fuel shortage was kind of crazy because there was actually fuel, but there was no lorry drivers, like no HGV drivers. But then even in education sector, you know, there's a lack of teaching assistants. So, you know, you're right. It's weird. Weird it is, times.
Yeah. And it often is like, you know, there is definitely a lot of people pushing back on the, it's because people don't want to work anymore. And then there's a lot of people that push back on that. Because that, of course, I don't mean to be rude. It's such a silly, notion.
Yeah.
It's such a like, it's so simplistic and like completely in like completely vapid, like there's no thought in that.
No,
there's
none at all.
There's and so it's really funny, and I'm glad that I see people pushing back on it, but I don't, it's mostly just kind of fighting. And I was just thinking that I wanted to start calling it the Great Reclamation, because you talk a lot about reclaiming ourselves.
I do indeed.
And I really think that this Great Resignation I'm a part of it, you guys. Like, I mean, if somebody were to do a study about this, I would be in the tally of people during the, you know, participating in the Great Resignation. And it's not because I don't want to work. Well, actually, I don't fucking want to work. Are you kidding? People don't want to work. Why would you?
Yeah. But even I don't even think it's not the fact of not working, because that implies that you're not doing anything. And actually,
totally,
you do quite a lot, but it's more that you're doing what you want to do. And, you know, you're not being exploited.
Exactly. Because their definition of you don't want to work anymore is the definition within this capitalist society, this monoculture idea. And I do reject that. I mean, I don't want to work because that's the definition of work in that context. And so I think that a lot of people, a lot of us are redefining what work is and what it means. Because I really think that it has a lot to do with me reclaiming myself and other people reclaiming themselves. And you happen to write an entire book about this topic.
I did. It's only quite a small book, to be fair. But, you know, you know, like, I admire a lot of writers, and I like philosophy and, you know, stuff like that. And a lot of the ideas that you come across actually make a lot of sense. But then what you kind of realize is that that's where it kind of ends, you know, because then there's no correlation between these ideas and how then to kind of make them a reality. Do you know what I mean? So what you see is people who, and, you know, a lot of the time, because I am really working class, like, when I grew up, like, my mum was worked in a pub, my dad was what we call a scrap man. We were really working class. And so for me, a lot of the time when I talk about the working poor, I'm talking about people who do hard, hard jobs, like hard labour. And, you know, they are poorly rewarded for that hard labour, you know. But actually, when we look at it in a wider context, actually you can still be in a well-paid job, but it can still be soul destroying, because, you know.
Oh, I know tons of people like that. I mean, that have things and are still completely unhappy.
Yeah. And it's because things are just things, aren't they?
Yes. You because, know? And we're working, I mean, those people in particular. So like working class people, like you were talking about, that you don't really have time.
Yeah, you're so busy trying to survive. Yeah.
But then there's people that actually are surviving okay, and they are just create more work for themselves so that they can buy more, because buying more is like,
it's the dumb
thing.
That's
what we're trained to do.
Yeah.
To buy things and to need things. And sometimes when I talk about this, it makes me feel like I'm pretentious.
No, I don't think it is, because I kind of look at it this way, you know, what we're talking about when, you know, the example you're using there is people buying things for the sake of buying it. And I think what really they're replacing is that sense of experience. So I think that's what's lacking. And that's why, you know, they enjoy the experience of going out and spending time with people. It just so happens that they happen to be like buying things at the same time. But I think really it's the experience that makes it seem... Do you know what I'm trying to say?
100%
is that experience of being with people. So when they get home with all of their new things, you know, they realize that actually that those new things haven't made them better.
Well, and when you're talking about this, I was like, oh man, our moms, wonderful women that we love very much, they like shopping. And so when I was younger, I would do like, our hangouts together would be us shopping together. It was us spending time together, and it happened to be like it was the experience.
Yeah, but then we can even like look into that a little bit deeper. And you know, so for example, your mum, for her mum, for example, she for your grandma, or you know, for her, the fact that they had time and money to go out shopping would have been quite a luxury. Because for our grandparents in particular, you know, I think we sometimes forget how lucky we are. So for grandparents, my grandparents worked, but then the women would also have to like take care of the family on top of that. And so if they also had to kind of, you know, you ever seen those old-fashioned washing machines? But then you think even before that. So housekeeping was almost like a full-time job in itself, you know. So the fact that all of these technological innovations took place actually freed up time for our grandmothers, for our mothers, and even for ourselves, though we might not necessarily recognise it. And then so we have this time that then we then fill, you know.
Yes, for sure. And I really, and I'm not saying, I enjoy doing all that stuff with my mom. I loved it.
Yeah, it was awesome. The experience though, right?
Yes, and it was the experience of being with my mom, and it was like a time that we didn't have to be with other people. It was just her and me, and we would hang out together and be together. And so yeah, and that, so like, that's so funny because it just points to how much capitalism like is like informs us as we grow up, because I also feel guilty talking about it in that way, like it was the experience, and I'm trying to have an experience with my kids but not through that, and I don't mean it to sound that way, right? Like my mom was sharing something with me that she did not have.
Yes. That's it.
It's such a nice way to look at it.
You know, and because the people who don't have those things are often made to feel so bad by society at large because they don't have them. So then to have them, you know, I don't know. It's almost like it's a sense of achievement in itself because now you have them, you know?
Yes. And it just points me to the fact of like, I still want to remember, I want to acknowledge that and say that and know that that's how it was, and also be allowed to want to do it differently.
We really do. And really that's what reclaiming ourselves really is all about. It's about actually people are, and I think, because I wrote the book when COVID kind of first happened in the first lockdown in the UK, which I think was 2020. So I wrote the book in that lockdown period when I was working from home. And kind of what I realised was, just by like looking on social media, because that's how you kept in touch during that time with like your friends who you would normally see at work or at school or whatever, You would just kind of see what people were doing, and I kind of felt that was reciprocated by people who wouldn't normally have done that. So actually, I realised that people were seeking for something meaningful, but something that they could do that was realistic, that they could achieve. Because quite often, all of these ideals that we talk about as concepts, they're all well and good, but if they can't be translated into practical real life applications, then really that's all they remain, ideas, you know. So really, yeah, reclaiming ourselves really starts with that essence. It starts about practical steps that people can do in their everyday lives, you know.
Yes, which is so important, because I do this thing to myself, and I know a lot of people do it, but I'm putting it on me because I also do it. What about, yeah, but if you're doing this for yourself, what about all this other stuff? You know what I mean? Like, yeah,
but the thing is, you know, we also have to realize that actually, most of all, what do we have control over? You know, we don't have control over what's happening in these places. All we really have control over at the moment is ourselves, you know. So we need to start reclaiming ourselves, and then we can start, because reclaiming ourselves within that framework is community building and solidarity and mutual aid networks and all of that kind of stuff, you know. So first of all, you kind of work on the self, and then those things come into it, because I think it has to be that way, otherwise, you know, you're building on shaky foundations.
Agree. And it feels diametrically opposed to the way we actually do things, at like that, the way that we're supposed to do things. We're supposed to always be controlling others first. And so like, this is a way for us to be put ourselves at the center, not for like this selfish thing, but guess what? We can't control other people. And a lot of our problems are because everyone's trying to control others. So maybe if we don't want other people to be in control of us, we should start being in control.
And we also have to realize, you know, that, you know, another way to look at it is by starting with ourselves, we are actually realizing that we ourselves have issues that we need to work on before then we can go to other people. Otherwise, then you just start projecting your own issues onto those new communities that you're trying to build. So actually, we've all got that self-work, you know, that we need to do before we can, you know, it's what we teach kids, you know. We teach kids manners and how to share, and then we bring them with other children where we reinforce those things we've just taught them. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like that, but obviously.
Yes, for sure. But it's like, instead of getting just like, our parents are growing, like we are being raised in the culture in which we all live with our parents. And so we are being raised with all these ideas that we aren't even aware of and becoming people. And so like, unless you sit and do all that self-work, you can't. It's really hard to separate between what it is that you actually care about and what it is you do because you don't want to feel shame, guilt. You know, there's some sort of attachment to it. So we all have to do that really hard work. And people do it, right? I see people trying and working on themselves a lot right now.
Yeah, you know, and I think COVID really highlighted that because, you know, really what it came down to when people were in lockdown was that who you had at home. A lot of people who were on their own at home, who were isolated, perhaps their family lived far away and they couldn't travel because of, you know, the lockdown, obviously a lot of people suffered in terms of mental health, whereas people who had the people around them, and I'm one of those lucky people, I spent lockdown with my partner and my children, do you know what I mean? So it wasn't, you know, it was okay for me. But yeah, so all of those things, we kind of realize it. I think it made people realize how important connections are, but also
the right connections.
Yes.
Like we, I think so many of us realize how much energy we were putting out into things that like drained us versus things that, reciprocated with us. And so it's funny because I think there's been a large amount of boundary shifting. And then there's funny, like, pushback on boundaries that is like way, there's all this stuff going on with people's boundaries right now, more than ever that I've ever seen in my whole life. Maybe I just wasn't aware of it. Sometimes I think that probably all this shit's been always happening. I just wasn't aware, but I happen to be aware of it now. And I'm assuming everyone that's listening to us is currently aware of this stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I do think the stuff that's happening there probably has been happening for a long time, but now we're just more aware of it. In terms of like government scandals and stuff, you know, before the internet, how did we really find stuff out, you know, nowadays? But yeah, so the stuff that's going on has been going on for a long time, you know, and then COVID was just kind of a double whammy, really. So, you know, I think those events have really made people change their outlooks. And I think it's also made people realise that all of the different parts of our lives, you know, or the things that seem separate because we categorise them and separate them, actually they're not, you know. So, you know, we see people kind of saw how their community then had links to their mental health and their well-being and all of that kind of stuff. And it's the same with reclaiming ourselves, you know, and it falls across different categories because all of those things that are separate, they come together to make us, you know.
Which is really, I want to say profound, which is really profound to be, because the thing is, you know, you start by making changes to yourself and you focus on yourself and you focus on doing work on yourself so that instead of reacting, you're responding. And then by doing that, like you could see during the like what you're talking about, during the pandemic, that the community really affects you. And then you can see how your community changes as you change and put out, you know what I mean? The energy that you yourself are putting out is changing your community. And that, and I mean, maybe, I mean, also you change your communities. They evolve and flow and move depending on the way we need them to. And that's dependent on what we put out.
Yeah. And that's it, you know. That really is it.
And all that stuff is so important. And so what I like, too, about the book is that you're giving people starting in small ways, like what do you even mean by reclaiming yourself?
Well, you know, for so many of us, you know, like it's just, and all, I always base everything on my own personal experiences because it's what I've been through. So I know what it's like to kind of have interests and hobbies and things you want to pursue, but for whatever reason, you can't. Most often that reason is because of money, or because you're, and then because of that issue of money, you're stuck in a job that firstly doesn't pay you enough to survive, and then secondly wears you down so that you're constantly tired, you know. And I've had jobs that have been physically hard labor for 40 plus hours a week, and you know, still at the end of the month, you're still struggling, you know, you have to be careful, you have to count the pennies, you know. But even before that, when my children were really small, and I was a stay-at-home mum and my partner went to work, because I don't know about what it's like for other people in the world, but in the UK, childcare costs are ridiculous. Like, you might as well not work because they're that expensive. You know, if you're on a minimum wage job and you have to pay nursery costs, there's literally no point in working because all of your wages go towards childcare costs.
It's very expensive here too. Like, I had a well-paying job when I had the twins, and it was over half my paycheck.
Yeah, so you either guilt trip to go to work, because that's why the parents do it, because A, they need you know, they're thinking about the long term. It's easier if you go back to a job, if you leave because of maternity leave and then you go back to it after your maternity leave's up. Then when, if you suffer those first years until your kid's in full-time education, you know, then it's easier to progress your career. Whereas if you kind of take that career break and then go back to work when your child is, you know, it's hard then to kind of catch up to where you would have been.
Yeah, you lost that momentum of going through this system of
yeah. So, you know, in the back of your mind there's always that, plus then the guilt of actually putting your kid into childcare. So, you know, and then on top of that, it's perhaps you're still poor at the end of all of this trauma. And so, you know, it's a vicious cycle and you feel trapped. And, you know, it's the way the capitalist system works, you know. And then for those on the very bottom who work hard labour jobs, they have all of that and still they're really tired, they're really poor. And, you know, so it's hard. We need to reclaim ourselves from that, because that is not living. That is not life.
Yeah. Know? And I want to point out too that I also think that a part of that is like giving up the judgment of people that we perceive to be below us, because this system is built on you being better than other people. So even if you have absolutely nothing, you can still look over and be better than someone else. It's so built on, and that's what you see over and over and over, as we're just picking at different people just so that everybody can feel better than someone else.
Yeah, and although it might be a cliche to say it, but it's also, you know, as long as we're all infighting, our attention is turned away from actually making the changes that would improve all of our conditions.
Yes.
You know.
Yep, because it's always somebody else's fault. It's not the system's fault. It's this person's fault.
Yeah.
Did you see this person? Ugh.
Yeah, when we're all oppressed by the same thing.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
So for me, reclaiming ourselves, it's really about having that freedom to live a little bit more freely, to do what it is you want to do, basically.
And you break it down into different categories.
Yes, yeah. So the first one's food, because I think that if you are so, and I've been in this position myself many times, if you are always really worried about finances, and what that boils down to really is where the next meal is coming from. So if, you know, food security is something that troubles you a lot, it's so debilitating because it's such a vital need. So if you're worrying about having to go hungry or not being able to feed your kids, it's so tired, it's draining, it's an awful feeling, it's horrible, you know.
And when you're in those places that you're describing, the food that you can afford is the worst. It's like you said vicious cycle earlier, and that is exactly what the food part is too. It's really,
yeah, so even if you have, and you know, for people who are in that place right now, absolutely do what you have to do to survive, because you know, we bang on a lot, and this is why I get kind of pissed off by the government's green initiatives, because all they do is kind of demonize poor people at home and abroad.
Yeah, and then make you buy new stuff that had to be manufactured somewhere and somebody is making money off of, instead of teaching people how to fix things that already exist and having people have jobs, we just buy more shit.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And the thing is, I am an animal rights, you know, I care about food standards, I care about, yeah, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I don't eat meat myself, but I'm not against eating meat per se. However, you know, and it's right, if you can afford to, you should always eat the best quality you can afford to. But the problem is, if you, all you can afford is like the, like really low quality food that you know isn't great, you know, it doesn't help to be shamed by that, because you already know, but what are you going to do?
And the thing is, you're doing it a lot of times, you're doing it not only because it's cheap, but because you don't have time, or you perceive that you don't have time. A lot of times we say we don't have time for stuff, and we have time. We have it. We have all the time.
Yeah, and also skills. you know, the skill of actually being able to cook from scratch. So my second book in the series is actually that, and it's Reclaiming Food, and it's loads of really basic recipes that can, you know, it talks about making stocks from scratch, soups, bread, all of those kind of things. And then it builds on all of those skills that you learn. And it's really about helping create nutritious but filling meals.
And with a foundational level of information, like you don't have to have ingredients from every country. What could you find around in your, you know?
Yeah, because like we have lost some of the skills. And again, if we can kind of see it in how it's progressed through the generations. Again, because if we look at, you know, our grandmothers, you know, who probably cooked, you know, and their mothers who cooked a lot from scratch because, you know, they had to back in the day. There were no ready meals, no microwaves, no kind of, you know, do you know what I mean? So cooking meals from scratch was normal. So, and, you know, for many people who were perhaps poor, it was using everything. So like perhaps the cuts of meat that have fallen out of fashion now and all of those kinds of things. So then when all of those little luxuries that we see now as luxuries started to come in, all of the ready meals, the microwaves, all of those kind of things. Again, it was maybe they were liberating for our grandmothers and our great grandmothers. Do you know what I mean? But we've almost become trapped by them now because of our reliance on them. And then it goes back into, we work hard jobs for long hours. We can't be asked to, when we come home because we're tired, we can't be asked to cook from scratch because it takes, you know, ages. And then you've got all the, do you know what I mean? So again, it's all a cycle.
Yes. Like our culture then was one thing. And now we're like looking back on it. Like, I get why you guys did that. But it doesn't work for us. It's actually, we can see retrospectively that it caused some problems. Can we all agree that these probably aren't the ways that is best to live? Like, I don't want to.
Yeah.
Don't make me feel like I'm being mean to you. Like, I guess I just...
No.
But do you know what I mean? I think that there is this hilarious nonsense where we have to have millennials against boomers and like... That is doesn't have to be that way. I don't even know if that is real. I mean, of course,
I think it's only real online. Yes. I don't think it's real in real life.
And of course, some people do because they forgot to be empathetic and they forgot to think about it. But if
there's always going
to
be dicks, aren't
yes,
there? Do you know what I mean?
Of course. It's there's like that Simpsons episode with the elephants. And these. Did you see that one? There's just always one that's a jerk. And that's just, you know.
That's just life.
But that doesn't mean everybody is that way. And so... It's just one more of those funny divisions that I see that I think is just kind of over the top. So let's look at how it's different now and reassess. Is this shit, are we going to do this same shit? It didn't work. It's not working.
Yeah. And then I also talk about reclaiming medicine. And then we can see kind of the pendulum swing there as well, because, you know, we talk about Big Pharma and we can all recognize that, you know, when medicine companies put money before actually getting that life-saving medicine to where it's needed, you know, we all know that's shitty.
And you can see the reclaiming food and the reclaiming medicine both have to do a lot with the way everything changed, the culture changed towards food being produced in a certain way and the culture changing towards scientific, and I'm saying this with quotation finger marks, scientific medicine.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, you know, I always feel, because I do a plant medicine workshop as well, and whenever I talk about like, alternative medicines or medicines for common ailments, you know, I always have to say that actually I'm not against conventional medicine, you know, because again we see that pendulum swing where actually is, I don't know, you see some shit online and you think, oh my god, what is going on with the world, where's, do you know what I mean? where I think I saw an article and I have no idea if it's true, where some guy is getting sent to prison because he convinced some family to kind of replace their cancer treatment with some oil or something. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know if it's true, but you can fucking imagine it, can't you?
Well, no, I actually think that that kind of shit is like way more talked about than yes. it actually happens to make
yeah, exactly.
it.
Yeah, exactly. And then it blows
the reality
up.
of actual good alternative.
Yeah,
medicine.
And then the thing is, we just get this reaction yeah. all the time. We're always in this reaction state of this pendulum swing between these two extremes. You
yeah,
know?
It reminds me of conspiracy theories. Like, if somebody thinks that you're a conspiracy theorist, then you're dumb. Even if your conspiracy is like, the government doesn't work for me. It only works for businesses. You conspiracy. You're like, oh, you're, wait. No, you can't confound everything in such a simplistic manner. And that's the same with medicine. You should be allowed to say that you believe in alternative medicine without having to sit here and say that you also believe that it's
yeah,
good
well,
for
I know,
things.
Right?
And we
but
feel like
we can't...
we have to.
Yeah. And the thing is, though, that reclaiming medicine is important because then it feeds into like reclaiming the land, because I use a lot of herbs for common ailments. Like, I make cough medicines because, you know, the cough itself is the body's cure. The cough medicine that you buy from the pharmacist is basically sugar syrup to soothe the throat, you know. And so these things we can do for ourselves. So a lot of the stuff I talk about in reclaiming, it's just about remembering forgotten skills and all of these things that will allow us to live a little bit more freely. Because what I found really interesting was during that first lockdown. So the year before, I hosted a few foraging walks in my local town. And, you know, people know what I do. And when I do those, I get enough interest that I fill those groups. But you know what I mean? It's not, they're very small groups. They're not, it's not a mainstream activity, mm-hmm. I guess is what I'm trying to say. But then when the lockdown happened, and when COVID first happened, and in the UK, like, people, it's that fear element that turns people into morons. So the supermarket shelves were stripped of food. I can remember just going to get my normal, like, kidney beans and stuff, and like, and I mean the dried stuff, not even the tin stuff, to make my recipes, and like, gone. Do you know what I mean? So a lot of people were worried about food. So a lot of people were contacting me about foraging at that time, and could I take them? And, you know, the thing is, people don't know. They don't know what's around them. You don't have to really go far. And so we've lost all of these forgotten skills. And then reclaiming medicine. And then the land also feeds into reclaiming our bodies and ourselves, you know. Like I say, it's hard to kind of separate all of those categories because all of those parts are massive parts of ourselves, you know?
Yeah, yes. Definitely, you know, it makes me think about when I moved into this house, and when we moved here, there was a bunch of St. John's wort that grew everywhere, and I'd never had it before. And then I would start picking it, and I started making an oil out of it. And so that when my daughter had eczema, I would put it on, and then I put it on her eczema, and it helped. I was like, how convenient that this just happens to grow in my yard and doesn't cost me anything. And there is this, like, this thing that happens, I think, in our medicine is our number one export. It's like our number one moneymaker in the United States is medicine. And so I think that my husband is a nurse, has been for a long time. I've worked in hospitals and in medical facilities for over 12 years. I believe in a lot of really good medicine. I particularly worked in trauma, and that is a super amazing Western medicine that we need and I love. But also, I also see kind of some things that feel like we're overdoing it, and we could be doing some things that ourselves, and so instead we're like relying on, you know, systems that don't know us, and you know, that we could reclaim, like you're saying, like making cough medicine, making some oil to put on eczema. I'm not saying that, like, if you have a tumor that you should not go to the hospital, like you should
But the, you know, and then the thing is as well, we, you know, by getting to know those plants and by picking them, you're also interacting with the land. And, you know, as an animist, for me, there's that spiritual element there as well.
Yeah, and you can't even know or feel that until you're experiencing it.
And like as an Obeah woman, that is also part of the medicine, that spirit work element as well, you know?
I think that it should be for everyone too, because I think that reclaiming medicine has a subset of reclaiming. It doesn't have to be spirituality, like you don't have to use
I just use that word for ease of understanding.
Exactly. I'm just saying it for anybody listening. It could be, people say prayer, people say meditation. People have an actual practice, witchcraft, shamanism, any simple yoga. I mean, any of that stuff that you are actually paying attention to yourself and your energy and how it relates to things outside of yourself. And it, so reclaiming land, reclaiming medicine, all for sure directly relates to reclaiming your sense of self, which would be that spiritual. I mean, as an animist, I think spiritual is the perfect word.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yes.
Because we're talking about interacting with spirit, right?
Yes.
Sometimes
yes.
people hear the word that's spiritual and then they want to mutate it into some negative thing, and you're like,
yeah,
we're talking about interacting with spirit.
Yeah.
You know. So I yeah, all of those things.
Yeah. And then they feed into like the reclaiming our bodies as well. And for us here at Lilith's Left Hand, who are, you know, we have these podcasts kind of elevate the feminine voice in left hand occult space, you know, we have to talk about bodily autonomy and especially what that means from a female perspective.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for me, that also includes, we do feel at war with our bodies, don't we?
Yeah. I don't, it's a part of our, this, like, what I'll just keep talking about it, our monoculture, right? Is that we have to be at war with everything. We're at war with each other. We're at war with, you know, diseases. We're at war with food. We're at war with drugs. And we are definitely at war with our bodies.
Yes.
Trying to feel like they're acceptable in some way or another. And then we have all these things like, if you're body positive, then that's not right. You have to, I mean, and now it's body acceptance, which seems to me to be great because that's all you can do. As like, this is it. This is my body and I live in it. You know, of course I want for me to feel good in my body. But don't we have to start by existing in our body?
Yeah. And I think we also have to kind of, alongside existing in our bodies, we also kind of have to understand how capitalism has kind of separated us from ourselves. And, you know, it's really driven the narrative on beauty standards. I can remember the other year before COVID when people went to the beach and, you know, I can remember in the UK there was quite a big pushback against this billboard poster, and it was about being bikini body ready or something like that, about getting ready in shape to go on the beach in summer, you know. And it was an advertising campaign. I can't remember the brand or the product, but there was a massive pushback against that. And because I think, you know, people are kind of starting to actually, you know, realize how all of that works and the false narrative it pushes.
It's funny because it's just like, I'm banging on about capitalism today. I'm sorry, but that is part of it.
Well, no, never apologize for that. People need to hear it. You know my thoughts on this.
It's like you have to market yourself at all times. You can't just be a person and exist. Like, your body has to be market ready. I mean, marketing, and I'm not even talking about selling your body. I'm talking about like you're controlling what other people think about you. Here is my package. I'm giving you this to try and control what you perceive to be me. And if I don't look a way that I think that you perceive as acceptable, then do you know what I mean? It's
yeah,
really.
And then it can also become like a defense mechanism, you know. So not only do them people do all these things because it's, you know, what is perceived to be the norm, although it's not the norm, but that's the narrative that's pushed. But then they do what, you know, they do all of those things to protect themselves from the scorn or whatever it is they'll receive for not doing them, you know, the shaming, whatever it is. And so, you know, it's kind of a double-edged blade in that regards.
Yeah, it's just everything is this built on in this system is built on shame, guilt, and judgment. And the funny thing is, we're all doing it to ourselves. Like, I shame myself. I judge myself. I feel
guilty. It happens in all communities as well, you know.
Yes.
It happens in, I can remember when I first kind of started broadening my horizons and actually, like, getting to know people in the wider pagan community, both online and in real life. And it's like, maybe it was quite naive of me, perhaps, but I can remember just being quite shocked at how two-faced and mean people were. Because in my mind, I thought, you know, we're spiritual people. We're going to do spiritual things.
Yes, I have had
but
similar
it's not. It just
experiences.
Turned all of those things spill over into that as well, you know.
Yeah, just because you're a witch does not mean you've ever thought about your worked on yourself at all.
Yeah.
I'm not being mean. It's true for everybody, every group.
Yeah,
and I remember having an issue at the beginning of me like seeking community that I'm just like, oh, you believe in this? We'll be, you know, and thinking then that means that we're not mean and judgmental.
Yeah. And in fact, actually, we fucking are.
We're mean and judgmental, you know, about different shit.
But even, you know, again, we see it in different spheres. I'm in an online foraging group, okay, and there's a lot of mushroom. It's mushroom season in the UK at the moment out in the wild.
It was just here too.
Yeah. And so, you know, people, and bearing in mind, it's a foraging group. So the aim of foraging is that you're going to pick something and eat it, you know. But then in terms of mushrooms, to get a proper ID on a mushroom, even if you're quite familiar with it, you have to examine all the different parts of it. So not only where it's growing. So is it growing in a field? Is it growing in woodland? If it is, what type of woodland, you know? And then does it have gills or paws underneath? And then all of those things you have to look at. So you have to pick the mushroom. So even in the foraging group, you know, you'll get someone will say, is this what I think it is, you know, because they're new and they're seeking some advice in this community in what it's set up to do. And then there's always like two or three posts going, you shouldn't pick if you don't know. And you think, why are you fucking here?
Totally.
You know, it's that same mindset.
Would you go with me? Would you like to go with me? Do you have time to go when I want to go? Will you walk around with me and show me? Because somebody needs to teach somebody.
Yeah, exactly. And especially with mushrooms, because, you know, it's so easy to get it wrong. And if you get it wrong, it can be not good.
Totally.
News, you know. But yeah, it, you know, you join communities and you think all of those things that just affect the outside, you think that's where they're going to stay, and they don't if we don't do all of this work that we've kind of been talking about, you know.
Yeah. And it is hard work. Like starting, and it is all interconnected, because as you start working with one thing, like the land, then you automatically will start thinking about medicine, because the land kind of is medicine. It is, you know, it provides you things that you could actually put in your body as medicine, but, it, you know, being with it is also medicine in itself. And then, you know, when you're in that space, you start thinking about yourself and then all this body stuff comes up, or all this, you know, like all of the stuff comes around. And then body stuff automatically moves into food stuff. It just goes in weird cycles back and forth.
I know. And, you know, so this is why we need to start. This is why we need to take those small steps first, because really those small steps are a lot.
You know. They are a ton. If you identify, if you can identify, so for me, I think about it as, how am I living in the world without capitalism? I can't leave the world, you know, well, I could, but
yeah,
but you know, dying. But,
yeah,
but,
there's no alternative. You know.
We are where we are, and this is what we have. And so what can I do to change my relationship with it so that I have less of a relationship? There are things that I can't do, but what can I do?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
And it's everything. It's so, and then once you start thinking about it, it's so pervasive. I mean, talking about reclaiming your body, you're going to have to think about that beauty standard. Like, everybody needs to be like a thin white lady or a very muscular, tall white man. You know, what is that all about? You know what wow. I mean? Like,
that's a whole nother episode.
Yes. You know what I mean? It's all about what the monoculture is pushing us at the time. And do we actually want to? Because for me, it feels like now that I realize I have some choices in my life, because I am in a really good, and also I think I've always had choices, but also right now I'm in a really a unique part of my life that I have more choices than ever. And so,
yeah,
I
and the do. Thing is about having choices, sometimes when we're so, and it goes back to what we were saying about being stuck in a rut. Sometimes when there are choices there, we're so busy focused on trying to survive, or there's so many other things that we kind of cover up those choices that we don't always see them at that time, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And so right now I'm in the place where I've been really thinking this about this stuff and unraveling it. And it's just me kind of untangling anything that I can that I don't need to be involved. And so, like, just like what we're talking about, like, it is reclaiming myself. It's me weeding through all the stuff that I was that we have all been taught and that has been taught to me. And it's not because I think that the people that taught me are pieces of shit or blah, blah, blah.
No,
it's
absolutely.
Not, it's
yes.
just, I don't need to
it's
have
not
to
a dig
do
at
any
anybody.
Of that. Yeah. It has nothing yeah. to do with anybody except for, like, my actual relationship with myself and the world around me.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about reclaiming ourselves, but in that process, we don't exist in vacuums, you know. We're not just single entities. And so as we begin to reclaim ourselves, automatically then we begin to kind of forge links with other people in our communities. So if we think about looking at food, you might begin to forge links with, you know, growers or individual independent greengrocers or markets. Do you know what I mean? So we talk about reclaiming ourselves, but these things don't happen in a vacuum, and it's a process. And as we go through this process, we discover that actually we've already begun to make those links with the people around us.
Yeah. It's so, I know, I'm just sitting here looking out the window thinking about how great it is and how actually hard it is. And a lot of times people don't talk about how, like, it can be very difficult and kind of isolating because people don't, when you don't think like them, it feels like you're judging their choice. And so they are defensive. And I don't want to be defensive. Like, I don't want to have to defend my thoughts. I would be happy to talk with people about my thoughts, but I am not doing this anymore. I'm not defending who I am or why I think things. If you want to talk to me about it, but people do, because I'm sick of feeling defensive.
Yeah, and setting those boundaries is actually a part of that reclamation process, you know. We have to have those boundaries.
Yeah, and since I've done it a ton in my life, I know other people are doing it. And I witness it in my existence, in my life, because I have made choices that are different from other people's and even different from choices that I would have made earlier 10 years ago. And so the thing is, people that know me feel like they don't know me anymore because my choices are so vastly different than anything that I had before. And that is the part that can feel very isolating and hard.
Yeah, and it can, you know, because ultimately, you know, people that can only begin this path of reclaiming themselves when actually they're in that place, that mindset of doing it, you know. It's a, yeah. And it's a before you get to that point, it is like a process of slow realization, you know. But so it's all a process. Everything begins with a trickle.
Yes, except for economics.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, it just reminded me of that, and then it just made me laugh. But yes, I understand what you're saying. To me, it's like a ripple, you know, a wave, one ripple, more ripples. And so it starts with that one first little rippling out, and then it can go further and further. And it's funny because sometimes you make these tiny, tiny little changes and start seeing things differently and examining them. And you're making these tiny little changes, tiny little changes, tiny little changes. And then all of a sudden, you're like, holy shit, I'm a totally different person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In a good way. It's kind of amazing how for years you make these tiny little changes and a lot of the stuff that you wanted to do, you're actually doing.
Yeah. And also, you know, the thing is as well, from the outside looking in, it can often appear as though those changes have occurred all at once, because actually that process of realization, it starts in the mind way before it actually starts showing up in your actions and the things you do. So for the individual going through that process, they've actually been thinking these things for a long time, and they've kind of looked into them and they've thought about them, and you know, so it's been a long process. But then the actual doing part of it to the outside world can look like it's just happened out of nowhere, you know. And so that's another reason why it can be isolating. But you know, in my experience, when I've kind of spoken to people about the things that I do, because you know, to a lot of mainstream people, they're a bit weird. Mm-hmm. You know, because it goes against like the grain, or it goes against the flow. But normally when I speak to people, actually then they start thinking about what that means, because you know, I'm just a normal everyday person.
But you're not. You are. I'm like, of course you are. You're a normal,
yeah,
everyday
but you
person.
Yeah, know what I mean.
But
you know,
yeah.
To the, and what I mean is, so the people who I'm talking to, I've grown up with them. I've known them for years. I work with them. They're people who know me, you know. And in that way, I'm just an everyday kind of person. Do you,
yes,
know what I mean?
Yes, I mean, and well, I guess the what I meant was, you are, because spirit, like people that actually, and that's the thing. We're not trying to be divisive. We're trying to be inclusive. You are just like them, and they are just like you. And you have found a way to live in the way that makes you feel better. And so that you can have this, like, an actual group of people with different cultures instead of one monoculture where everybody agrees. So you're like them in the fact that you're a part of their community, but you're not like them. And that's okay, because they know you and you're safe.
And then actually I think it shows that, you know, you don't have to follow that strict kind of narrative. You can have that freedom to kind of make your own choices and just kind of live more in the way that you would like to. And
yeah,
for me, that really is what reclaiming ourselves is about.
And I'm so excited that I think that a lot of us are doing this collectively.
Yeah, me too.
It reminds me of The Parable of the Sower is an Octavia Butler book. And the one main character, her name is like Lauren Oya Olamina. She says she has this like book where she talks about change. God is change. And change is like the only inevitable thing. And so that is true, right? For all of us. And so we are change. We are changing and we are seeing the world change. And if we are, what are we going to change into? Are we going to, you know, so at least I'm going to change into something I want and see the world as something I want instead of seeing the world as like this divisive monoculture. And so maybe if all of us are during this great reclamation are really starting that process and working on ourselves, I think that the communities are going to get really amazing. And I'm super excited.
Me too. Me too.
Ooh, and a plug for your book. Seriously, guys, if you want to read about reclaiming ourselves, definitely get this book. We're going to put it in the show notes. And did Reclaiming Food just come out too?
Yes, it did. And it kind of just builds on like the first book, but goes into like more detail about food security and some of those skills. But I think if you go to the Gods and Radicals website, I think like you can buy both of them for like and get discounts and stuff. Oh, and I think there's a sale coming up soon.
Oh,
on Gods and Radicals site as well. I love a good book sale.
Me too. So guys, check it out. And also I want to mention before we get off, we are doing a book club. We are doing every other month. So this coming month, we're reading The Kybalion and getting together to talk about it. The Kybalion is free online. Our book club is free online. If you want to come, go to our website and just get a ticket. And the
come
ticket
build
is free.
Community with us and talk about books and just have a great time.
Yeah, free book, free talk. Let's talk about it. And we're going to have some events coming up next year. And lots of good stuff. So I'm really glad that you guys listen to it.
Yes, me too. Me too.
All right, Emma, I really love talking with you.
I know, I had a great time.
We'll come back. We have lots of fun guests coming up.
Yes, we do.
All right.
Oh, how exciting.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.